For some reason, we have a certain chemistry or whatever.
Just received a beautiful letter from Kim Jong-un.
And they said, would you speak to the leader of North Korea? I said, absolutely. Why not?
We are starting from a very high plane. We're starting from a very good relationship.
We had a historic meeting and decided to leave the past behind.
Stepping across that line was a great honor. A lot of progress has been made.
President Obama wanted to meet, and Chairman Kim would not meet him. The Obama administration was begging for a meeting.
But now there's this new reporting from the New York Times of a possible major concession by the Trump administration, something they said they would never consider before, allowing North Korea to keep its entire nuclear arsenal as long as they agree not to produce any new weapons.
I can talk him out of those damn nukes, because who the hell wants him to have nukes?
You've got to be honest about what it means to lead a country. It means killing people. A lot of countries commit atrocities, including a number that we're closely allied with.
I would invite him right now to the White House.
We understand each other. I do believe he understands me, and I think I maybe understand him. Sometimes that can lead to very good things.
President Trump's public overtures to North Korean leader Kim Jong-un reached a new level over the weekend.
We're seeing exactly the same pictures here of President Trump walking in between the blue huts. And in fact, there is Chairman Kim coming from the other side.
I've never expected to meet you at this place.
That's the sound of President Trump stepping across the border into North Korea from the demilitarized zone that divides the Korean Peninsula. He is the first sitting U.S. president to ever do so. It began as a last-minute Twitter request from Trump, and in the space of a day turned into that unprecedented and highly publicized moment. That was followed by a nearly hour-long meeting between the leaders, during which they reportedly agreed to resume nuclear talks, talks that have been stalled for months. Is this the path to real nuclear diplomacy or just a photo op? I'm Arun Venugopal, in for Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. Sung-Yoon Lee is a professor in Korean studies at the Fletcher School at Tufts University, and he's been carefully watching this all unfold. Professor, so nice to have you back on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Sung-Yoon, tell us first off your reaction to this meeting on Sunday. What struck you the most?
When President Trump intoned big moment, tremendous progress, well, he spoke the truth. Tremendous progress it was, a big moment it was for the North Korean tyrant. Kim Jong-un's game plan had all along been to ensnare President Trump into an open-ended process of negotiations without reaching a settlement, during which time Kim buys time, political cover, and money in the form of lax sanctions enforcement to further advance his lethal capabilities to grow his threat capacity to the region and ultimately to the U.S. mainland. So everything's going swimmingly for the North Korean leader.
You use a striking phrase in a new column you wrote for The Hill. In regards to North Korea, you cite the quote, weaponization of its weirdness. What do you mean by that?
When you look at the North Korean leader, I mean, you know, they're so bizarre. They're such a strange amalgamation of medieval mores. They're funny. They're weird. It really works to their advantage. Kim Jong-un's father, just like Kim Jong-un did, for the first 6 years upon inheriting power, never met with a single world leader, never traveled outside his country, was threatening, was considered a crazy lunatic. And then 6 years later, boom, Kim Jong-il in May 2000 shows up in China, receives the South Korean president in June, receives Vladimir Putin in July, sends a special envoy to Bill Clinton and so on. And when Kim, the second that is, visited China's special economic zones in January 2001, much of the world hailed the arrival of a North Korean reformer. It's exactly what has happened over the past 18 months or so with respect to Kim. Our propensity to patronize, make fun of North Korea is so strong, it's hard to take North Korea seriously. We see North Korea as a poor, paranoid player that would settle for a bit of civility or some economic goodies.
Now, in that same column for The Hill, you accuse the U.S. of practicing a certain kind of Orientalism. in terms of how it approaches North Korea. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, when you look at the conventional indices of measuring state power, political attractiveness, military power, economic power, the size of your population, territory, soft power, the United States is so overwhelmingly superior, it really is hard not to patronize North Korea. But you look at the scorecard on the ledger of nuclear diplomacy over the past nearly three decades, North Korea has reaped away from the world's biggest countries tens of billions of dollars, much of that in cash. For what? For repeated lies of denuclearization. And what has Team America gotten? A nuclear North Korea. You got to take them seriously.
Moon Jae-in of South Korea also met with the two leaders. Are Moon and Trump on the same page when it comes to negotiating with North Korea?
It's a strange marriage of convenience. Mr. Moon is a known entity. He was the chief of staff for a former South Korean president who was in office 2003 to 2008, during which time South Korea gave North Korea each year almost $1 billion, more than half of that in cash. It was unconditional, very generous kind of engagement. Where all that cash ended up is anyone's guess, but at the time, North Korea pursued a policy of military-first politics. So Mr. Moon comes from the far left on the political spectrum. The fact that there's been a convergence of interests between Mr. Moon and Mr. Trump is an oddity.
President Trump has been calling himself victorious on North Korea for quite some time, saying North Korea stopped nuclear tests and was sending back the remains of U.S. servicemen who were killed in the Korean War. That is misleading. But what do we know about what has actually happened in the time since negotiations last broke down?
Well, I mean, intuitively, on a fundamental level, it's much better to have handshakes, bonhomie, summit pageantry than mutual threats, escalation, and so on. But President Trump is selling as victory the past 18 months or so of non-serious weapons test. The last major test came in late November 2017. Well, by that low bar, then we should perhaps award two or three Nobel Peace Prizes to President Obama or President Bush, because there have been several three-year-long periods of non-weapons tests between 2006 and 2009, 2009 and 2012, 2013 and 2016. So it's a bit premature to celebrate the past year and a half of no serious weapons test as a victory.
Sung-Yoon Lee is a professor in Korean studies at Tufts University. Sung-Yoon, thank you so much for being on The Takeaway.
Thank you.
We're going to go now to former U.N. ambassador and governor of New Mexico, Bill Richardson, who has himself negotiated with North Korea. Governor, it's so great to have you back on the program.
Thank you.
Governor, can you give us your reaction to yesterday's performance? Did anything substantial come out of this impromptu meeting?
Well, nothing substantial came out. The good side was the president and Kim Jong-un obviously have a personal relationship that's good. There's less tension in the region. However, the bad side is he's legitimizing a despotic leader who has not given up anything on denuclearization or any promises he's made in the first negotiation.
Now, Governor Richardson, President Trump told reporters that President Obama had, quote, begged for a meeting with the North Korean leader and had been refused. Several former Obama administration officials have said that that is a lie. What can you tell us about that?
Well, the president is just not correct whatsoever. I was involved with the Obama administration, not as a member of their administration, in trying to bring political prisoners back, Otto Warmbier, some of the remains of our soldiers. There's no way President Obama wanted a meeting with Kim Jong-un. On the contrary, there was enormous hostility.
All right. I'd really like your take on where exactly we go from here. What needs to actually happen now, in your view?
Well, several things need to happen. One, the president and Kim Jong-un need to step aside from the negotiations because they just have photo ops. Secondly, the two teams need to develop a framework for negotiations. If a compromise is going to work, and I think a compromise is needed, the U.S. is going to have to get off their demand for full denuclearization from North Korea. They're not going to do it, but maybe they denuclearize some missiles, some nuclear weapons. Secondly, the sanctions relief. North Korea is not going to get the abolition of all sanctions, maybe get some. Go stage by stage, take several years, but find a negotiating framework that today doesn't exist.
Now, on a number of occasions, President Trump has made the pitch to Chairman Kim that these negotiations could lead to economic prosperity for North Korea. Is that, in your mind, a successful tactic for driving these negotiations to the next stage?
Well, what I believe Kim Jong-un wants is he wants to trade some of his nuclear weapons for an end of sanctions. Now, economic prosperity, yes, he wants American investment, European investment. I think that's possible way in the future. But Kim Jong-un has to improve his human rights record, has to respect private property, and he has to substantially denuclearize and stop threatening his neighbors like South Korea and Japan, principally Japan. And China needs to keep their sanctions on North Korea to keep the pressure on North Korea to negotiate seriously on denuclearizing.
Governor, you've shared, including on this show, concerns about a lack of Korea expertise in the president's cabinet and in his diplomatic corps. Where does that stand right now? Has there been any progress on that front?
Well, on the positive side, I think highly of Stephen Biegun, who is the North Korea negotiator. He's not a career officer, but he is a good negotiator and politician. I do worry about a lack of Asian expertise at the high level, ambassador, assistant secretary, on Asian issues at the State Department. The State Department has been stripped of our best diplomats. So I worry about that. I worry about expertise, not just with South Korea, with Japan, with North Korea, but I do think that Biegun is doing a good job, but the president has to back him up. And the president is not backing his negotiators. He wants photo ops. He wants summits. He wants historic moments. And it was a historic moment for the president to step into North Korea. But we have to have results. There's a lot of show and no results. The results are North Korea, get rid of some of your nuclear weapons, full inspections, get rid of some of your missiles, destroy them, but don't just talk and share the world stage with the president of the United States, which has always been a North Korean goal. He's been legitimized internationally and with his own people by these three summits.
The president has raised the possibility of inviting Kim to the White House. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think that would be wildly premature, but I wouldn't put it past the president. You got to hand him the showmanship prize, but certainly not invite him to the White House until he commits to denuclearizing his weapons and denuclearizing his missiles and lessening tensions, improving human rights. That's the ultimate prize, a visit to the White House. Hold on to that. But I wonder what the president is going to do next. I can't wait.
Bill Richardson is former governor of New Mexico and former U.N. ambassador. He's been on the line with us from Geneva. Governor, thank you so much.
All the best. Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.